Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey everyone, I am Judy Greer and these are the movies that changed my life.
Hey everyone, I'm Ian DeBorja and welcome to IMDb's Movies That Changed My Life, a podcast where your favorite stars break down the films that made them who they are today. This week's guest is Judy Greer. You may know Judy from Arrested Development, Jurassic World, or her many roles in iconic rom-coms like 13 Going on 30 and 27 Dresses. But soon you'll be able to catch her in Hulu's Good Boy, which is the upcoming installment of Blumhouse's monthly horror series called Into the Dark. Judy and I talk about working alongside Jamie Lee Curtis in the new Halloween, her appreciation of fans of Arrested Development, and a film that is also on my list of movies that changed my life. Once again, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to leave us a star rating or leave a review or give us a shout on social media using hashtag movies that changed my life. Thanks again for listening. And here's Movies That Changed My Life with Judy Greer. Judy Greer, I am a huge fan of so many things in your career. 13 Going on 30, Arrested Development, which I will talk to you for my own self-indulgence a little bit here. But how are you doing on this Friday morning?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm the same as every other day, you know. The days, is it Friday? I don't know.
I know. It's like everything. I like having to check my calendar very frequently because I literally lose track of days. It's very bizarre.
Yeah, it is weird. I mean, like work-wise, I feel like we're still kind of sticking to like a Monday through Friday, like for like work stuff. But no, it all feels kind of the same, but I'm really good.
Speaking of work stuff, your IMDb page is always, first of all, do you know how many credits you have on your IMDb page as an actress?
No.
Even ballpark.
Like, I feel like maybe like 80 something?
141.
What?
Yes.
That is actually a lot. 141. But a lot of it's like, you know, little things.
Yeah, still.
But yeah, wow. That is a lot.
Yeah, that is like I was shocked. I mean, I knew you've been in stuff for, you know, all over the place. Like animation, Marvel yeah. movies, Jurassic yeah. World, all that sort of stuff. But it was when I saw it, I was like, holy crap. And you have so many awesome things coming up, not just this year. You have things announced for next year and things coming out in the next couple of weeks. Speaking of first, let's talk about Into the Dark. So Into the Dark is the Blumhouse Hulu anthology horror series.
Yeah.
And you are starring in one and executive producing a one called Good
yeah.
Boy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so why don't you talk about that?
I think this is such a funny story. So I, somewhere around this room, you may see, or I have this little terrier rescue dog that I got. And you know, in this like, well, now everything's different, but where everyone was having like emotional support animals all the time. And it was kind of becoming a little over the top, like having a turkey on an airplane and like an emotional support snake and like stuff like that. This is in the genre of horror, of course, like poking fun at that. And this woman adopts this emotional support animal because her life is, it's sort of not where she wanted to be at her age. And so she adopts this dog to calm her down basically it goes awry. The dog takes its job very seriously.
Very, very seriously. I've had a chance to watch it, and it is a great time.
Thank you.
Yeah. So how did you get involved in the role? I've heard a funny story where, like, you were working in a coffee shop somewhere, and some people literally came up to you.
I was actually walking my dog by the coffee shop, and the two writers, Will and Aaron, they saw me walk by and they like ran out. They were like, Judy, you don't know us, but we're represented at your management company and we're writers and we're like in this coffee shop. We were like literally just like writing the script with you in mind. And then you walk by with a dog and it's about a girl and a dog. And like, this is so crazy. And I was like, okay, everyone calm down. So they kind of like loosely like pitched me the story right there. And I was like, this is kind of interesting. Like, why don't we all like, let's set up like a proper coffee and, sure. and do like it properly. And so we did that. And I thought the story was really great. I had just finished the first Halloween and I had such a great experience at Blumhouse. We all had a big love fest. They were like, hey, anything comes your way you're interested in, like, please like send it to us. And so I did, I sent it over there and they felt like it would be perfect for their Into the Dark series. So that's kind of how that came up and why I got to be an executive producer, which is cool.
So for those who aren't maybe the biggest fans or too scared of horror, I still think Good Boy is a fun watch because it's like very camp. It's very like over the top and it's like you're more giggling as like what is happening like along the way. Was that like intentional? Did you know the guys wanted to do it very tongue in cheek from the get-go?
Yeah. You know, when we hired Tyler to direct it, it was that's a genre, like the sort of like comedy broad horror is a genre that he is so good at. So yeah, with a script like that, it could go a lot of different directions, but I just thought it would be more fun to have fun with it. If we are making fun of this service animal industry, then like, let's really make fun of it. And I think that's a fun way to make a horror movie. And it's especially fun because like you said, like, anyone who doesn't like horror would probably really like this movie. I mean, yes, we do have some scares in it, but like, it's a good time.
Like we said earlier, each episode of Into the Dark is about a holiday during the month. And so June's holiday is Pet Appreciation Day, which is great because this is a very funny way to, you know, to say thank you to pets who go the very full distance to protect their owners.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have a yappy dog too, so I understand. Okay. I was watching, I was like, you know, if Abby really wanted to, this might happen, so.
Yeah, definitely mine, Mary, she 100% would. She's tried, actually.
So you talked about Jason Blumhouse already, and you talked about Halloween. So you were just in like the reboot of Halloween alongside the amazing Jamie Lee Curtis, and you have two more coming out already, 2020, 2021. Obviously, you probably can't say much about either of the films, but how about just, you know, getting to expand across the first film to three more? What was that, getting to work with Jason and the rest of the crew? And
well, David Gordon Green likes to keep the same. He likes his crew, and so going and doing. So we haven't shot the third one yet, but going back to shoot the second one, Halloween Kills, was basically just like going back to your family, like that you love so much, because it's all the same people and people love David so much. They want to come back and keep working for him. So that's why he gets such a great crew and he gets like people coming back and actors included. Not that we always have a choice, but it was kind of just like going home. The first one we shot in Charleston, the second one we shot in Wilmington. It was kind of fun to like be in a different place, but it's such an honor. Once I was so excited to get cast in this role, but once I got to Charleston to start shooting the first one and working so closely with Jamie Lee Curtis, like I realized like what a huge honor it was to sort of like pick up this franchise again and tell this story of trauma and of this woman who has been haunted her whole life by this man. And I was like, whoa, like I thought I was like going to go make a fun horror movie with some cool people. But like, really, there was a lot resting on this movie. So I was so happy with how people received it. I was happy with how it ended up. Working with Jamie Lee Curtis is like, I mean, she's so inspiring, and she loves Laurie Strode so much, mm-hmm. and she loves the franchise so much, and she has so much ownership over it and over the story, and like literally and figuratively. But like, you know, she just makes you want to make the best movie possible. And she made me want to like tell this story truly and deeply and not just like make a fun, campy horror movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so when I got there, we started working. I realized like, oh, we're making a movie. It just happens that a dude tears people's like organs out of their body and stuff. But
so 2020 and then 2021, yeah. back-to-back years. And they're both going to be coming out around Halloween, right? That's the idea, like on Halloween ideally right around that weekend.
Yeah.
So we will keep an eye out for that. All right. So let's get into the movies that changed your life. Where do you want to start? You sent over four awesome picks.
I know, because I thought you might want to choose.
Oh, no. We can go all four.
Oh, cool.
We prepped them all for it. This is how we do it here. Where do you want to start? Is there any, or do you want me to choose for you?
You start.
Okay. I'm going to start with the oldest one first, the oldest release. Mm-hmm. So let's start with Casablanca. So 1942's classic Casablanca, directed by Michael Curtis, written by Julius J. Epstein and Philip J. Epstein, Howard Koch as well, starring Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, Paul Heinrich. Set the scene here. When was the first time you saw Casablanca?
Well, I grew up in a suburb of Detroit, Michigan, and there's this beautiful old theater in downtown Detroit called the Fox Theater. And when they spent like a few years renovating it while I was in high school. And when it first opened, like kind of their soft opening was that they would play old movies there. And I'd never seen Casablanca, and I think it was the summer before my senior year of high school, and my boyfriend at the time, like my high school sweetheart, and I drove down to Detroit and saw Casablanca for the first time in this like huge, old, beautiful theater, like the way it would have been seen the first time around, I'm assuming, you know, before the age of the multiplex. I think one of the reasons that I responded so much to the movie was part of it was that first experience of like going to this big old movie theater and seeing it on that huge screen. And it was so beautiful. And she's so beautiful. And their story is so romantic and sad. And, you know, like, I like unhappy endings. Not that you could definitely argue it's a happy ending, but as far as the couple is concerned, you know, you see that like she doesn't, spoiler alert.
If you haven't seen Casablanca,
I'm not going to say his word, but like, I don't feel bad for spoiling her. Because she doesn't stay with him, it's so bittersweet and so beautiful. And I think I've always since then been drawn to like the unhappy ending. I think, you know, the look on his face when he sees her for the first time is, I mean, I don't know how you could ever replicate that performance. The friendship, you know, between obviously like Sam and him, and I loved just their love story, I mm-hmm. guess. And also the bar, Rick's is so cool. Like that set is amazing, and every little character in it is important to the plot.
Yes.
And everyone gets their moment, and it's really like, that's challenging. And I appreciate that as often a supporting character in movies.
Yeah.
I guess it made me feel too, when I saw it in high school, like, oh, this is what grownups watch. Like grownups watch old movies and black and white movies. And so that made me feel kind of like mature for my age too.
When I rewatched this for this recording, I haven't seen it probably in maybe 15-ish years. It is like, and I watched it again, and
I'm so glad you watched it again.
From the beginning, you are like locked in. I mean,
I know.
Like,
there's not a wasted moment.
No. It's like incredibly fast paced. Like the first time they go into Rick's Cafe American, and they walk through and they show all the key players, like people playing poker, the bartender, Sam playing piano, like all the things so fast. So many people involved. And like you said, everyone matters. It's really cool to see, especially for a movie like when people don't want to watch an old black and white, like classic movie. They maybe think, like, oh, it's going to be, you know, this really slow thing. But it's like Casablanca, I think the note I took is that it has action, it has mystery, it has drama, it has romance.
Yes.
And they do it so perfectly. Like they don't miss a beat in anywhere.
I know. It's kind of a perfect movie. I mean, there's every every moment is filled perfectly. There's no wasted time. There's no wasted space. There's no wasted shots or dialogue. Like, everything furthers the plot along. And yet it's like so beautiful. You do kind of get lost in it. You feel like time sort of stops there. At least I do when I watch it. Yeah, I love it.
So something very important about this movie is that I think, A, there are so many lines that people don't realize come from that, yeah, from this movie.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine.
Everyone knows that, but then there's like, well, I didn't realize a Roundup the Usual Suspects came from this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was a shock to me. Do you have a favorite, like, one line or sort of bit that comes up?
I mean, I'm a sucker for the end when he's like, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. Like, I love that moment.
Yeah.
But I'm also a sucker for all the gin joints and all that. Like, that is, like, so good. I mean, really, he's not wrong.
Right.
What are the chances?
Very, very low. Another one I love is We'll Always Have Paris. I think that's such like a beautiful way to end it. Again, spoiler alerts, folks. But and then on the other side of that, I think there are shots from this movie that people, like, even if you've never seen Casablanca, you can see like the side angle of Ingrid Bergman, or that shot of Rick sitting smoking a cigar when you first see him. And people, like, who haven't seen the movie, they look at that like, oh yeah, that's from Casablanca. Like, it's funny how like impactful it is, just because you see images like that, you know, in like Academy Award montages or
or
Criterion Collection commercials and things like that. Like, people just know it. It's so funny. Do you have any specific reason why you think it's like just lasting imagery like that?
I guess for me, it's like a mood. Like, when you see that one image, it tells you the whole story, the whole mood, the whole tone, like that whole feeling it conveys. I mean, and because it really is like a piece of art, I think that, you know, we see these pictures from the movie and they feel like home, you know, he just creates these gorgeous tableaus and they convey so much. I mean, it kind of just goes back to what we were saying before, like that there's nothing wasted in that movie. And I don't know, there's some really great, you know, there's so many from so many old films, like iconic images, like Dustin Hoffman in the pool in The Graduate with his glass, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you just like, and that picture tells a story, and that's kind of, those famous images from Casablanca tell those stories too. Like the look on his face when he sees her, like that's all you kind of need to know about how he feels about her, you know, and just her face, like so insane.
I know.
Someone is that beautiful.
and like the way, I mean, it's kind of a famous story, but the director Michael Curtis, he shot her differently than everyone else throughout the movie. Like, they put, you know, the twinkly lights in front of her so her eyes would glisten, and they put a softer lens on her, and like things like that. It's so cool to see, because like he was having the viewer view her as Rick views.
Yeah,
it's so cool to see that they do things like that. I mean, way back then, that you know, people try and emulate now, but get close, but not quite to that level. It's great,
right? Well, it's because it was enhancing the storytelling, not just about like a beauty shot. You know what I mean? Like it was all to serve this greater purpose. Instead of now, sometimes when you're watching a movie, you can see like if they're cutting back and forth between close-ups, you're like, this is a fully different lit. Like, this is not how the scene was lit in the master. Like, and by the way, usually it's to my benefit when it's me. So I'm like, great, like just light me, please. But definitely sometimes you're like, I don't think that, you know, like they've definitely like changed to make this actor look more attractive.
Right.
but I don't know that it always serves the purpose of the story. In this case, I think it does.
Right. Well, fantastic. Casablanca. Classic. If you haven't seen it, come on.
Please
watch it.
No excuse, you're home anyway.
So next movie up here, this is one of the movies that changed my life as well. So this is 1994's Pulp Fiction. 8.9 out of 10 on IMDb, 1.7 million ratings, written and directed by Quentin Tarantino, starring John Travolta, Samuel Jackson, Bruce Willis, Ving Rhames, Uma Thurman, Tim Roth, Amanda Plummer, Eric Stoltz, list goes on and on and on and on. Set the scene for this one, please.
I mean, this movie it blew up what we thought of movies when it came out. I feel like there is before Pulp Fiction and there's after Pulp Fiction. And like, obviously I'm a super fan of this film. I'm not always a huge fan of Quentin Tarantino's movies. Like, mm-hmm. I always see them and like respect them. But this one just like, I mean, don't you agree that there's like before Pulp Fiction and after? Yes. Like, it's just like, even the way he tells the story, like the narrative is all over the place and it totally works and it totally makes sense. And he just like rips apart all the rules of everything. And God, I just like, it is such a ride. It's so wild. And I mean, I'm even now thinking of when Bruce Willis like goes back and like, God. And you're like, what are it's like, God, my husband and I constantly are like, when we call each other, we're like, prank caller. there's just like, if you're going to talk about like iconic, like images and lines, like how many are there from this movie? Like,
infinite.
I just don't think a day goes by that someone's not quoting like a Royale with cheese. Like, I just don't even like, even the other night I had a nightmare. Oh, and God. I was in bed and I like stood up and went, oh, like my husband was like, what's up, Uma Thurman? like, I don't know. I'm probably not a great guest on your podcast.
No, this is great. No, because we're getting the pure emotion.
It makes me so excited. This movie, you can never not want to watch it. You can't even believe like the stuff that happens in it. I mean, every single scene is so perfect when they go to that. Oh my God. And they go to the apartment and those kids, it's just too much. Like the suspense that is built up in that movie too. In every scene. Jeez Louise.
It's one of the most watched movies, probably like my two or three most watched movies ever. And every time you watch it, there's something you get out of it. And when I was rewatching this one, the whole movie is a perfect 10/10 for me, but it is probably the first 45 minutes to an hour of this movie is like the most brilliantly written piece of filmmaking. There's so much good stuff in it. I mean, like every scene, like you said, is quotable. Every performance, is amazing. So when you saw this, did you happen to see this in theater or did you see it?
Yeah.
You
know what happened for me? I think I was a first year in school in Chicago when it came out, and the soundtrack. I mean, God, this is so long ago, but like the soundtrack came out first, and I bought a CD of it. I just became so obsessed with the music of it, and thinking like, what is this movie going to be? What that connects all these songs? Because I remember like Reservoir Dogs, just had such a great
soundtrack.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Such a great soundtrack and how much that added to the film. The songs really were like a part of the storytelling. And so I was just like, could not wait for Pulp Fiction to come out. I was like, I don't understand these images I'm seeing of this movie. You know, this is also like before the internet. So you're really only seeing trailers and movie theaters for movies, or if you're watching television and it's a commercial for the movie. And so like, it just was incredible. Like I couldn't understand it. And then going to the theater, like I think I went like opening day, like my mind was completely blown. I couldn't believe how you could tell a story in this way and how it worked and these performances, which, you know, like just we're so in this over the top world, like so grounded and so good and believable. And then like, thank you again for bringing me John Travolta back, because like he was gone. I hope he writes a nice Christmas card to Quentin Tarantino every year. because weren't you kind of so intrigued with like, what is John Travolta doing in this movie? Like, how is that? How is he in that movie with Uma Thurman and Samuel Jackson? Like, that's so crazy. yeah, it was, it just like, it blew my mind. Clearly I was, I thought like everything's different now, you know, like movies are going to be different now.
Yeah. Many people try and do what he did, right? Similar kind of what we said about Casablanca, but obviously on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like any filmmaker, actor, writer, anyone in the film industry, I feel like currently maybe like getting their reels together and they're coming up now, like all have Pulp Fiction as like, yeah. I want to do something that's like going to change the film industry like this.
And it did.
And still does. Like it's still, when you watch it now, like there are a lot of impactful movies, I think, when they're that are older, we're like, oh yeah, like this is, I understand how this was important and like, but time, things yeah. have developed since then, like for the mm-hmm. better. And like, I don't know, like Pulp Fiction is like such a piece of film history and like that crosses both like the uber like cinephile nerds who will break down like every scene and like, you know, oh, there's that shot when the camera goes through the fence when Bruce Willis is going back to his apartment, like analyzing yeah. that stuff. And yeah. then there's a side of people who just like, yeah, it's like an awesome movie.
It's like the best movie. It's so funny. I know. Yeah. I think I'm so a little, I think I straddle that line because like, you know, I appreciate so much like what, like the art of the movie, but then at the same time, like I easily can just watch it and get totally right. lost in it too. And this movie, I feel like, is for everybody. It's like women and men alike, you know? I mean, I don't know a dude who's not like, I love The Godfather. I know a lot of women who are like, okay, The Godfather. like we'll all agree that it's kick-ass and it's yeah. important, but like I'm not like, I'm watching The Godfather. It was on and I had to watch it to the end. Like I don't see a lot of my girlfriends being like, yeah, The Godfather was on, so I had to watch it to the end. Like right. no one turns off Pulp Fiction.
I love that. That's a great way to put it. Do you have a favorite, I know this is so hard, do you have a favorite scene or a favorite moment in this whole movie that when you think of Pulp Fiction, this is where you go to? Impossible, I mean,
I know. It's impossible because I was just talking about it with someone else the other day. We were arguing about, it was in like a Zoom drinks I was having.
Sure.
And we were arguing about if there was alcohol in the milkshake. And we were oh. like, no, there isn't. And like one of the people was like, yeah, no, there was. There was like whiskey in it. That's why he wanted it. He had to taste it. I'm like, no. He was like, it's just ice cream and ice or milk and ice. Like, he's like, I don't understand like why it's like a $12, whatever it was, milkshake. And I was like, no, there was no alcohol in it. Like we were just arguing about it the other day.
And a $5 shake.
I didn't want that shake. Martin and Lewis or Amos and Andy?
Martin and Lewis.
Did you just order a $5 shake?
Mm-hmm.
That's a shake. That's milk and ice cream.
Last I heard.
That's $5. You don't put bourbon in or nothing?
No.
Just checking.
I'll be right back with your drinks.
I mean, the dance is incredible. Mm-hmm. I love Eric Stoltz and Rosanna Arquette. Oh, God, I mean, like, so that's good. Exactly, and that random friend who's over there.
Who's just smoking her bong in the background.
And just, like, that's exactly that house. Like, when you used to have to go and buy weed from a weed dealer, like, that's the house you went to 100% of the time. Like, that's exactly, I feel like I have bought weed in that house from Eric Stoltz.
When Eric was like, get the book. Yeah, it's so good.
I mean, those just so, I don't know. There are, it's
hard to choose, but in any scene.
And by the way, it changes too. It's just so good.
Yeah.
I don't know why these people know each other. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, you don't have to explain it.
Just don't matter. And like, that's when I think of like, filmmaking when I'm writing and trying to I think I have to over explain everything. And you know what, I mean, at least maybe I actually probably do, but like when Tarantino does not, he just tells you what you need to know.
I'm assuming every single person who's listening to an IMDb podcast has seen Pulp Fiction, but just in case you haven't, just please.
I mean, yeah, please.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS, or play online via Facebook games.
I hope you're enjoying this week's episode of Movies That Changed My Life. If you are, don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure that you get all of your new episodes as soon as they are available. Because trust me, you won't want to miss the incredible guests we have coming up to nerd out about some of their favorite movies, like Tatiana Maslany and Felicia Day, just to name a few. Thanks again for listening. Be sure to check out imdb.com/podcast for more content and to easily add movies that we talk about on this show to your IMDb watch list. Now let's get back to Movies That Changed My Life with Judy Greer. Yeah, I mean, Arrested Development, I remember my friend tried getting me to watch it when it was on air, and like I didn't really get it for the first couple episodes. And he was like, keep going. And then I just became massively, massively obsessed with it, like the other hardcore Arrested Development fans. I mean, I dressed up as like George Michael for Halloween one year with the banana stand thing. I mean,
happy thing to your friend.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I mean, it's such like an impactful show because it was so, it's still ahead of its time. I still think comedy shows have a hard time like trying to figure out like exactly how it was so perfect. So I just had to gush about Arrested Development.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
It kind of has to happen.
I do, when it first came out on television, and like you said, like people just weren't really watching it, but you had these like freaky fans who did get it right away. Like whenever I would get recognized on the street from Arrested Development, I was like, you're cool. You're cool because you're watching this cool show right now while it's on TV, you know? Yeah. And then when it went off the air and everyone was whining about it, they're like, why? And I was like, I had a little chip on my shoulder. I'm going to be like, because you didn't watch it. Things are different now. You don't have to watch things on TV anymore, like when they're on. But yeah, at the time I was like, anyone who compliments Arrested is like a real fan.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to hear. I'm sure all the Arrested fans who will definitely be listening to this would love to hear that. And now they can, everyone can pat themselves on the back and say, see, Judy said it too.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go to 1982's Tootsie is your next pick. Oh. Directed by Sidney Pollack, written by Dan McGuire, Larry Gelbart. Starring Dustin Hoffman, Jessica Lange, Terry Garr, Dabney Coleman, Bill Murray, Gina Davis in her first role ever. This has an IMDb star rating of 7.4 out of 10. 94,000 people rated it as well. Set the scene for Tootsie, please.
When Sidney Pollack passed away, obviously it was really sad, but he was on my list of people I always wanted to work with because of this movie. And I was like, bummed I would never get a chance in this lifetime to do that. I saw this movie, I think, when I was probably too young to really understand like all the comedy in it. But it's a movie that like I've grown up with it, watching it. And as I get older, I see like more and more nuances, more and more comedy. I mean, I just thought it was funny. Like Bill Murray in that movie, watching it as a kid, and seeing like, oh, this is how grownups act, like was, I don't know, it made me excited to grow up. Like I thought like these people are weird and they're funny and they're interesting and they're artists and they're trying so hard. They're falling in love. They can't help it. Like, I don't know. I just thought like it was smart. And before I understood like what my brand of humor would be like, I thought like when I grow up, I want to be funny like this movie. Like I want my comedy to be like this. I wouldn't have known at the time, but this dry and kind of like a little darker sense of humor. And I mean, obviously like the performances are all incredible. And, you know, I suppose there's conversations to be had today about, you know, cross-dressing and that kind of thing. But sometimes I just like don't really want to spoil what was like really special to me as a kid. And yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was smart and funny and touching and deep and weird. And it made me really excited to grow up and move to New York City, which I didn't end up doing. I moved to LA, but you know.
When you were just becoming an actress and you moved to LA, did you sort of think it was going to be like that? You'd be living in a studio apartment with one person and kind of going out for these roles. You want to do a play with your roommate like Dustin Hoffman character does. Did you think that was going to happen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I thought, like, well, I'm going to go be an actor. I'll be like a starving artist like they were, you know? That's what I thought. That's how I thought it worked, 100%.
Sidney Pollack, so funny, speaking of things too early to watch, the first time I ever heard of Sidney Pollack was when I was first getting into movies and I watched Eyes Wide Shut when I was like 12 years old.
Oh my God.
Because I had seen The Shining, I had seen 2001. And I saw he's the doctor, he's Tom Cruise's doctor in Eyes Wide Shut. Yeah. So speaking of movies that I should not have seen when I was 12 years old, that is absolutely, I'm not sure I should see it now. I don't even know if anyone should see it. masterpiece movie. But he is in that and he is so funny in Tootsie. Yeah. His first argument with Dustin Hoffman, where he goes, they can't all be idiots if you argue with anyone. Like, you are a tomato.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Such a brilliant comedic timing in that whole thing.
They can't all be idiots, Michael. You argue with everybody. You've got one of the worst reputations in this town, Michael. Nobody will hire you.
Are you saying that nobody in New York will work with me?
Oh, no, that's too limiting. Nobody in Hollywood wants to work with you either. I can't even send you up for a commercial. You played a tomato for 30 seconds. They want a half a day over schedule because you wouldn't sit down.
Yes, it wasn't logical.
You were a tomato!
I know. That's kind of what I mean when I say, like, that's how I wanted to be funny. Like, I wanted to be funny like they were. Sidney, and also, like, what a great role to give himself to, like, as the director.
Yes.
Like, just killing it. I mean, the scene in the Russian tea room when he realizes like it's Michael Dorsey and he's like, and then the guy comes up and they're all, it's just like so stressful. The scene is like so funny. And yes, when he is just like, no one will hire you. It's just incredible.
Yeah. And then another note I had is Jessica Lange. We've been so trained to be horrified and terrified of her in recent years from her success on American Horror Story and all that stuff. And she is, it's so cool to see her young, completely different person. Like, her tone of voice is different, the way she is. Like, it's really cool to see her, you know, however many years ago that was, just at this kind of, you know, earlier in her career. She's brilliant in it. She's great. Like, you feel her pain. You think, like, does she want a mother figure within Dustin Hoffman's character, or does, you know, is there sort of like love interest? There's a lot of really nice subtle writing that like they build throughout the thing, and then obviously, you know, the payoff at the end. But she's so great. Any thoughts on Jessica?
Well, I directed a movie, and in it I had a scene where this young boy gets pushed down, and then this pretty girl helps him up, and I totally stole that moment when Dustin Hoffman drops his papers and she helps him up and she smiles and like you just see her and you're like, oh my gosh. I fully like was like, this is what we're doing for this shot. We're just gonna steal it from Tootsie. It was like my homage. I have not gotten the pleasure of working with Jessica Lange yet. Hopefully I will. But like, she's ethereal and so flawed. And that's like another thing about this character is like, you can't help but love her because she just like, just wants to be loved, but she keeps making these horrible decisions. And I love that. I love that she's not perfect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and how he feels about her regardless is, it's so human and it's so much more interesting than if she's just like this perfect girl who doesn't care for him, you know. She's a train wreck, just like the rest of us.
Just like the rest of them is, right? Something that I think works really well for this movie and allows it to age. Obviously, like you said, there's some, you know, maybe some controversial things here in today's world. But the fact that, Dustin Hoffman's character?
Michael Dorsey.
He doesn't really benefit from everything that happens. You know, he has his big moment at the end.
Right.
You know, you... you know, if it turns out like he becomes this face of like this feminist movement in Hollywood, I think it would be a very different sort of context now. But he crashes after that, and you know, he kind of has to go back to where he started. And I think that's a really interesting way to put it. Like, he has these good intentions, and maybe he's being a little selfish by doing that moment where he takes off the wig and like says who he is on that final episode. But the fact that he doesn't come out on top, I think is a really, really cool way and sort of like heads up approach to that ending. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I love the ending. And I also love that, like, throughout the whole story, like, he's really just trying to save up money to do that play. Like, he just wants to produce the play. And because of that, like, it's almost all forgivable, you know? Like, he doesn't count on falling in love. He doesn't count on being such a success. He can't help himself, but, you know, like, you have this like through line, like this journey for this character is like, I just need to get enough money to produce this play with my friends so that I can star in it. And I think that, you know, once he gets it and he sees what a mess he's made and he's so entangled, like, it's selfish, but it's makes for a really good scene in the movie.
It makes a really intense last like 30 minutes of that movie where like everything just keeps happening.
It's like falling apart. I always think too, like, if they were to make Tootsie today, I feel like I would totally get to play the Terry Garr role. Like, I would 100% be like the pining best friend who's just like, like screaming when she watches the scene. Right.
I'm in love with another woman.
I know.
Yeah, she is very, very great in that. I would love to see you in that. Let's get that done, people.
Okay.
So let's go to the last one. So this is the one I had not seen before. And that I absolutely loved. So this is 1996's Citizen Ruth, written and directed by Alexander Payne, starring Laura Dern, Susie Kurtz, Mary Kay Place, among many, many others. The synopsis is, an irresponsible drug-addicted, recently impregnated woman finds herself in the middle of an abortion debate when both parties attempt to sway her to their respective sides. It is a 7 out of 10 on IMDb with 7,000 ratings.
Guys, you gotta get that reading.
Gotta get it. People gotta watch it. So yeah, so I had never heard of this movie.
Really?
No, I'd never heard of it.
Oh, and, well, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. And it was awesome. Like, it was so good. So what's the story behind this one?
The story from my little like heart story about it is I was in acting school when it came out, and sort of like never thinking I would really want to be an actor or that I could really be a professional actor. It just seemed like an impossible thing to do. And then I saw this movie and I thought to myself, like, if they're making movies like this, then I want to be in this business. Then I really do care about it. And I care about these kinds of stories and these kinds of characters. Like, this type of storytelling is what I would want to do as an artist, is like what I care about. And then Laura Dern's performance is so like raw and gross and dirty and like ugly. And the vulnerability, she's just allows herself to really go there in a way that a lot of actresses just don't, you know, because they're, and that's Laura 100%. Like, she doesn't care about, you know, well, she cares about like wanting to be beautiful, but like, you
right.
know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
She is like, she wants to play these like flawed, deep, ugly characters. And, and I was just incredibly moved. I was incredibly moved also by the story, the direction, but yeah, it was mostly just thinking like, oh, maybe I do want to try this. Like, if there's ever a world where I could play characters like this and tell these kinds of stories, then I think I do. I think I want to give it a shot.
She and what's great about this movie too, so this is 1996. This is a Laura Dern in a post Jurassic Park, post Blue Velvet world. She is very much like an established actress right now. And she takes this like role that I haven't seen all of her work. I've seen a lot of it.
Yeah.
And it's something like, I mean, obviously right now we're living in Laura Dern's world. We have Big Little Lies, we have Marriage Story, and seeing her play this such a different role. I mean, from the start, like from the opening sequence, you know, she's completely transformed, and the story arc of her character is really, really like incredible to see. Something about this movie that I think is really, really interesting, like, obviously it deals with one side of the pro-life on the abortion debate and the other side of the pro-choice, and just when they think you're really like, oh, this is going to be all about how awful one side is, they swing it the other way and they just show you how extreme both sides are and how, like, you know, the moral of the story. And I think I'm not going to spoil the ending of this one because a lot of people may have not seen this one. It's really about how, like, in sort of not even just the abortion debate, but really heavy debates, a lot of the times the sides aren't thinking about the person who is actually involved in, like, what is happening. And Alexander Payne, the writer director, like, handles this so, so well. Like, he really makes you think, like, you know, like, who is this about? This is about her, you know, it's not about anyone else. And it's so good. Like, for a while there, like in the, you know, the second half of the movie, every 10 minutes, they keep ramping up, like, let's see how far we can push this and push this and push this. And then, like, now you're watching it and it's like, maybe at the time it seemed like very extreme, but now it's like, I can, like, kind of see all this, like, this, like, media showmanship happening and, like, all these extreme gestures happening. It's crazy.
I mean, I can't even imagine, like, you having seen this for the first time now, because isn't it, like, I know we don't want to make this political, but isn't it disgusting how relevant this is?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, right now, when you think about, like, that we are, this movie came out in 1996, and as women, we are still fighting for our right to choose and fighting for our own power over our own bodies. And you can't even, and it's like another, you know, at the time when this came out and I saw it and I was like, God, I can't believe we're still having these arguments and these fights. And now it's been, you know, like, it's still relevant and it's upsetting and also hilarious when you watch this movie.
Oh my.
And it really does shine a light on how ridiculous people can get and how they, as you said so perfectly, like, they really lose sight of their, of the cause, you know? They fight so hard that they don't really see that there is, like, a real impact on actual human beings. These decisions are important, you know, they're important to, like, one person and they're important to, like, all the sort of, like, you know, faceless people that they affect. Anyway, it's just, and then also I was like, who is this director? And everything, you know, my, one of my main goals, I said earlier, I wanted to work with Sydney Pollack and I wanted to work more than anything with Alexander Payne. Every movie he's done, I've just loved so much. And I finally did, I got to work with him on a movie called The Descendants. And I was just like, I couldn't wait to tell him how much I love Citizen Ruth. And he was like, really? And, you know, when you do press for movies, they ask you all the time, especially when you're working with such esteemed directors like Alexander Payne, and they're like, what's your favorite Alexander Payne movie? You know, and I'm always like, Citizen Ruth, man. Like, and my favorite Laura Dern performance. Not to try to ask you to see all the movies I've ever been in, but I did a movie with Laura Dern called Wilson a few years ago with Woody Harrelson. And she really, I feel like, brings Ruth back through this character a little bit. She's I'm like seeing a lot of Ruth in that when we were shooting the movie. And I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Funny you say that, because we actually interviewed her at IMDb on the IMDb show. And we asked her what character would she most like to revisit. And she said,
Ruth.
Yeah. Yeah. Nope. So very aligned. some other things on my notes, Laura Dern gives a great F-bomb. Like, my God. And the way she drops F-bombs in this movie is fantastic. She, it's so good. And then the Burt Reynolds cameo is unbelievable. Like, his introduction monologue, and then it cuts to him getting his massage. Like, he's,
oh my God. Yeah. Yes.
It's so good. Do you have any other favorite scenes from the movie?
I mean, I guess I don't want to spoil the ending. At the end of all this, there's sort of this, like, melancholy, to me, it feels like a melancholy moment at the very end. And it's just so beautiful because, like, it's so hard to maintain tone. And this movie, you know, a lot of times when you, like, are pitching ideas to people, it's like, well, what's the tone? What's the tone? What's the tone? And this movie somehow manages to be sort of over the top and grounded.
It's like,
it's broad, but these people are all so grounded. And then you have this, like, sort of, like, beautiful moment at the end, at least the way I'm remembering it, as being, like, almost melancholy. And you feel like, you know, I can't say it because I want people to watch the movie.
I know, me too. So my last note I wrote, was awesome ending that will stick with me. Yeah. Like the last 5 minutes, when it ended, I was like, that is like a very, very, like, it's like the perfect way to end the movie. God, I know I want to talk about that.
I know, because you're like, how is this going to play out? Like, what is going to happen? What is she going to do?
Yeah.
And when it happened, I'm also a really good audience. Like, I had to watch the end of The Sixth Sense like 5 times. I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. I was like, no, no, no. So I'm exactly who you want at a test screening. If anyone needs to go to a test, like once I'm really, I'll laugh, I'll cry, I'll scream. I will be like, oh my God. So I really was like, how is he going to wrap this up? What's going to happen? What's she going to do? There was no part of me that saw that coming. And then I was like, course.
Yeah. And it's really beautiful. There's like a great shot. Yeah. Just like the final like shots are, it's so good. People just watch it. Citizen Ruth. Yeah. Just watch it. All right. So we have Citizen Ruth. We talked about Pulp Fiction, Tootsie, and Casablanca. Do you see any through line through any of these movies? No, do you see any sort of connective tissue between them all?
Do you?
I was thinking, like, you seem to have, for the ones, like, you have a specific moment of where you watched it.
Oh, yeah. Maybe the connective tissue could be time in my life. Yeah. Because I was even thinking about, when I was getting ready to talk to you today, I was thinking about, like, God, I can't believe I didn't say, like, a John Hughes movie. Because, like, John Hughes, like, was one of my parents growing up. Like, that's how I feel about his movies, you know? And like, well, I guess if you were going to let me say more movies, like certainly like Pretty in Pink would be
Please,
on my
roll
list.
Roll them off, rattle them off. Yeah.
I mean, you know, like that movie I felt like changed me because I felt like, oh, I'm understood, you know, and like it made so much sense to me. And I thought like, oh, I'm being represented in a movie. Okay, cool. Also, but like, I think what you're saying is true. Like for me, it's like time in my life and all those John Hughes movies kind of, they are like sort of packed into this little chunk of time in my life. But the list I gave you really, they were specific to like where I was in my life and also literally like geographically when I saw them that like they have the most impact on me.
Fantastic.
I would also say if I was allowed to say one more that,
keep going. There are no rules here.
Rushmore really kind of blew my mind in a sort of similar way that Pulp Fiction did when I first saw Rushmore. I did see Bottle Rocket first, and I loved it, but there was just something about Rushmore that felt like
Rushmore hits different.
Yeah, and it's like it just is so earnest and like such an earnest story. And so beautifully told, I felt like it really was like, I was like, oh, wow. Okay, cool. I like this kind of movie. And I didn't even know that it existed.
Yeah. I am the worst, most annoying Wes Anderson fanboy.
Oh,
like
I mean,
every time a new Wes Anderson trailer comes out, I'm talking to my wife. I'm like, did you see? She's just like, let me guess. There's symmetry and there's colors. I'm like, yes, that's exactly what it is.
Yes, I'm gonna play a color. I know. I've directed one movie so far, hopefully more. Uh-huh. But I found myself like really like trying to steal. That's what you're supposed to do, right?
Of course.
I found myself like when I was shot listing, like always kind of like leaning on those kind of shots, those like Wes Anderson shots when possible.
Are you excited for The French Dispatch, his upcoming movie?
Just say, are you excited for, and if it's like anything to do with him, like,
Yeah. The first trailer for that, like when I was watching it, I'm like, this is just Wes Anderson at full Wes Anderson mode. And I'm very, very excited for that.
And I'm here for that. I'll always be here for that.
Yep. Well, awesome. Judy, thanks so much for hanging out.
This was talking about things I love, and I love that you love those too.
Yes. Thank you for Citizen Ruth. I will be recommending that to people for a while. So Into the Dark, Good Boy comes out June 12th, 2020. Yeah. It's going to be on Hulu. Anything else you want to talk about for people to keep an eye on?
We're finishing up recording season 11 of Archer, because of the pandemic, we had to push our premiere date. So I don't have a date to tell you about it. But FX on Hulu is now streaming all the episodes. So if you have Hulu, you should just go back.
You should go back and catch up on one of the most brilliant crossings ever. Yeah.
That, by the way, also another, I told you when people would like Arrested Development, I thought they were cool. And when Archer first came out, if people would be like, dude, Archer's awesome, I would be like, you're cool.
Well, Judy, thank you so much. This was a great episode.
Oh, good. It was really fun.
Well, thank you so much. And we will talk to you soon.
I hope so. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Bye. Thanks so much for listening. And don't forget, go to imdb.com/podcasts for more content on Judy and her picks. And while you're there, go ahead and add whichever movies you need to watch to your IMDb watch list as well. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.